Hi, I'm Bubba Fairman.
Hi, this is Ashton Olt.
This is Brendan Curry.
Hi, guys. This is T.D. Irwin.
Hi, this is Michael Towers.
Hi, this is Mac O'Keefe.
And you're listening
to the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast.
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 It's on Inside Lacrosse.
Welcome back to another episode of the D-Fly and Dixie Podcast featuring Big Ten Network, Inside Lacrosse Analyst, and my Blue Jay brother, Mark Dixon. I am your host, Dan Flynn. Dixie, let's get it. Little extended whip there.
I like that.
Like your stick.
The recoil. The
extra whip on it.
I like the recoil. I never played with a lot of whip. I don't like whip.
How do you like to string your stick?
I've never strung a stick before in my life.
Let me ask you a different question. How do you like your stick strung for you? And has it changed over the years as you've gotten older? Or I don't know, maybe you've lost some, I don't know, power on your shot, but your accuracy is better. I don't know. Like, how do you like your stick, Dixon?
I don't know. It's hard to describe. When I was in college and high school, I played with a traditional stringing, meaning the rawhide, and
are wood, right?
No,
is that how old wood. You are?
Oh, how dare you? Stick? No, man, I actually my weapon of choice in college was the STX Turbo, and that was right around the time where the titanium came out, when David Morrow from Princeton developed the titanium shafts. So I started using titanium, and then when I started playing club and then old man's lacrosse, I switched over to a mesh pocket. I like the ball to come off the shooting strings, but I like it to go like higher. I don't like it to whip down. I like to be able to pass. You know, I like to, when I played midfield, you know, I'd beat my man, look for the slide. I like to be able to pass. I wouldn't just like an always shoot midi. So I like to pass. But my older son, Matt's a really good stringer. He's excellent. He strings all of his brother's sticks. He strings a lot of teammates' sticks, strings a lot of his own. He strings for money as well. Works for a gentleman by the name of Tim Johnson. Strings for him, both men's and women's sticks. And Tim strung actually for me in high school. He used to string some of my sticks. We were high school teammates at Loyola. So
how long does it take Matt to string a stick, and how often does he do it?
That's a good question. Like when he's stringing his brother's stick, it might take like 15, 20 minutes, something like that. I think it's like once you get into a rhythm, it's pretty intuitive. And then also, I mean, he's also become a little bit of like a stick doctor. So he, can replace sidewalls or shooting strings. Greg Tanis, remember Greg Tanis, who I played with at Hopkins, he used to string sticks, and he did a good job for me. My sidewalls used to bust or fray all the time. Remember, graduating in 1994, we used to get one stick a year, and you know,
one pair of shoes, remember, like one pair of turf shoes, one pair of cleats.
Yep. And you had to buy your sneakers on your own.
They get so much gear now.
Oh, it's insane. My kids at the high school level get a ton of gear.
Yeah, but you're paying for that.
We pay for it, but it's still sweet swag. But so I used to have to, replace the sidewalls in my stick maybe 2-3 times a season. Because they would fray or break. And then also too, we used to start practice in February when it was really cold. We go full tilt, and a lot of times you break your stick. So you had to get those replaced. I wish we could. Things have changed a lot. But I've never been a big stick stringer.
Did you ever face off?
Back when I was, in youth ball. No, not in high school. I used to take a wing in back growing up playing for Catonsville in the Mila, Maryland Youth Lacrosse League, I used to face off. Never very good at it. I was a sweeper. Or a scraper, meaning you get down and then they blow the whistle and you scrape it out. You get it. If you don't, you're playing from behind, I think is the technical term in face-offs right now.
Dix, we got a full show today, including a review of the news of the week and last week's games, an interview with Hopkins head coach Peter Milliman, who will have baptism by fire in the rivalry this weekend. Bunch of game previews and our give and go segments. But let's start with your general thoughts and themes on what you saw during last week's games. Just a quick recap. You know, Georgetown's defense remains outstanding, record-breaking. Rutgers and Maryland are starting to look like the class of the Big Ten. Syracuse looked like a different team in a win against Virginia. What were some of your thoughts?
Yeah, it's crazy the week to week how things change. I think you need to start with the Syracuse, Virginia, the orange run out of the dome by Army against a Virginia team that came in 3-0 and played against some pretty good competition in Towson, Army, and Loyola. And Syracuse was up at half and then just put the pedal to the metal in the third quarter to win that game convincingly. So you got to take, you know, hats off to Syracuse. I think moving Brett Kennedy from close to pole made a huge difference. They won the middle of the field. Peter Dirth, I mean, everybody talks about Ryan Tarenfenko from Ohio State for good reason. Peter Dirth is a really, really good short stick D middie. Tough, physical, aggressive, good off the ground. And my, you know, that triumvirate of middies, Tromboli, Dordovic, and Curry. Curry's always been my favorite of those three. And he got the short stick, as teams have now elected to short stick Chase Scanlon, who again, really didn't do a whole lot in the game against Virginia for Syracuse against a short stick. But you can only pull two of them, and Dordovic and Tromboli got the pulls, and Curry against a shorty was just magnificent. I think he had, what, 7 or 8 points. So Syracuse is for real. Rutgers at Ohio State, 22-12 win, firmly establishing themselves currently as the number two team in the Big Ten behind Maryland, who was able to best Penn State in a game that we called on Big Ten Network Friday night, 13-7. Let me tell you how much fun it was to be back in the booth. But not only that, we were on site. It was a nice night for State College. It was
Joe B still complained about how cold it was a lot.
Yeah. Joe will never forget the game 2 years ago. We were at Penn State before the press box at Panzer was ready. We were on a platform at the 50-yard line, and that was a 20-degree night. I think Joe still hasn't thawed out from that almost 2 years later. So, well, we had to open the windows of the press box. They had screens in, and this is like my third or fourth game that I've called from Panzer. I think it was only Joe's second. But it was a little bit of a challenge to see Maryland's jerseys. They had those black jerseys with the red numbers, and they could be a little bit of a challenge. But then when you're looking through a screen, it's even tougher. So we had to, our crew, the ops crew, were able to lift the screen so we could see better. And I left my window open, and Joe left his, closed his, but my window was still open. I like open air, and I was warm enough. So I think Joe may have been a little chilly from that window being open, but we had a great view. Crowd, a little bit of a crowd. Parents were allowed for Penn State. I think Maryland had like 40 passes to the game, so 40 Maryland supporters were there. And it was just great to be back. It was a lot of fun. And Maryland is a very confident team right now. That's the word I used last week. That's the word I'll repeat this week. How confident the Terps are, both offensively and defensively. You know, and then you mentioned Georgetown. Got to give a tip of the cap to Jake Caraway. They won the game 19-1 against St. John's this weekend. Then a couple days ago, they beat Mount St. Mary's. They allowed 5 goals. What was it, like 17-5, somewhere in that neighborhood, the final score. But Jake Caraway now, 237 career points, all-time career point leader at Georgetown, broke the record of Greg McCavra. Remember Greg McCavra from back in the late 90s? I think he was
great,
part of that.
Great player.
Yeah. And was a was one of their main cogs on their 99 national semifinal team. I tell you, another player that jumps out at me is Ryan Tierney at Hofstra. He is just having an incredible start to 2021. I remember watching him in the Under Armour All-American game a few years ago. Obviously, his dad, Seth, friend of ours, a teammate of mine at Hopkins and former assistant coach at Hopkins. But he now has the career point records for the Colonial Athletic Association at 216. He has 144 career goals. And he's chasing the CAA goals mark held by Curtis Dixon, the former Delaware Blue Hen. And he's going after the all-time Hofstra points record as well at 238. I think that's Tom Kessler might hold that record. But Tierney has been torrid. I mean, that guy can shoot. So that's been fun watching him as well.
I think we're going to see a lot of that this year and in the subsequent years as students get an extra year of eligibility, yet some of the games from the 2020 season started or will count. There was going to be a lot of broken school records, conference records, national. Similar to, remember when the Duke guys?
That's exactly popped into my mind. Yeah,
got that extra year and a lot of scoring. I mean, you got to be a good player and you've had to have a great career. But having an extra set of games to maybe do that is going to – a lot of records are going to fall. Yeah, plus, fifth-year seniors, guys are better. They continue to improve and get better. And there's pros. Let's put it that way. There are pro lacrosse players playing college lacrosse right now. And it's showing up, and records we're seeing go down.
And yeah, we saw Jared Bernhardt join the 200-point club for the University of Maryland on Friday night. And then Mac O'Keefe is in fifth place right now, all time in career goals for the NCAA. And he, you know, only two goals in two games, but you know, if O'Keefe picks up his production, he's going to have a shot at overtaking the number one spot overall in NCAA history. Bernhardt fifth year, O'Keefe fifth year, but really this, it's going to be like more 4.5, right? Because the 2020 season was stopped after 5 or 6 games for each of those ball clubs. But overall, another good weekend. A lot of blowouts, you know, a lot of games that weren't highly contested. The Towson-Richmond game was a close game. I did watch that one or the second half, and hats off to the Spiders. That was their first win of the year, right? After some tough losses to Loyola and North Carolina, and they had to come back to win that game. But looking forward to moving on. Looking forward to the action ahead this week.
Yeah, when we look at news of this week that's happened, there were some games. You mentioned a couple of them from this week. Is Tuesday still for the Hunter? That's my question, because the favorite teams blew out their opponents on Tuesday. Wednesday's games were a little more competitive. Saw Virginia squeak by High Point 12-11. Also, news of the week, number 14 UMass, Dixon, what's going on up there? They had another game canceled this coming week with Hofstra. That's now 4 straight games. UMass is yet to play this season. They're supposed to travel to Albany for a game on March 9th, Tuesday, and let's hope that they can get that one in.
I don't know what's going on up at Amherst. Incredibly disappointing. That is a top 15, if not top 10 team. They have a lot of good players coming back. Preseason Colonial favorite to win that conference and grab the AQ to the NCAA tournament. I tell you what's the challenge is, you know, we voting every week in the media poll, there's really no justification to keep them 13-14. You have to, other teams are playing and you have to downgrade them. So I think I downgraded them to around like 18. They're not playing this weekend, depending upon the results. They may drop out of that top 20. I mean, how can you keep a team in that hasn't played any competition where other schools are, albeit, you know, starting later, but I'm not sure what's happening up there, but I sure hope that they can start playing soon.
All right, Dix, as we get ready to preview the games of the weekend, I want to bring on our guest this week. Our guest is first-year Johns Hopkins head coach Peter Milliman. Coach Milliman earned his first victory as the Blue Jays head coach last week in a 14-7 win at Michigan. And this week he leads his team into the greatest rivalry in lacrosse when the Jays travel to College Park to take on the number 3 ranked Maryland Terrapins. Coach Milliman, thanks for joining us on the D-Fly and Dixie podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Coach, every guest that we have on the podcast, we ask the inevitable question, COVID preparation and how you're handling that situation. You're a little bit unique in that regard because you are a first year coach at a program where in a lot of ways you were just getting to know your players when December, late December, early January rolled around to get things going for the Johns Hopkins Blue Jays. How would you best describe the process and handling the current environment with Johns Hopkins?
I mean, it's challenging, but I'm still coaching a team and, you know, we're playing games. So we're, you know, starting to figure each other out and starting to figure out, you know, what our team can be all about. And you know, that takes some time. And, you know, the fall was different from what I'm used to, but, you know, that's a word probably been described everything in the last year. So, you know, we're making progress. I don't know how to gauge the degree of the progress just yet, because I think we're getting better, and that's you know, satisfying some of my needs. But you know, we're continuing to see more tests, and you know, obviously it's going to get tougher this week, so we'll see, you know, where we really stack up against a team like this.
The Johns Hopkins job has only come open 4 times over the last 30 years, and it seems like on every occasion, whenever a quote-unquote outsider applies for the job or expresses interest in the job, meaning didn't play at Hopkins, had never coached at Hopkins, etc., the comment that is typically made is, well, everybody knows Hopkins, but no one really knows Hopkins. What did you learn about Johns Hopkins during your candidacy process and then subsequently now as the head coach that you may have not known before? And if that would fit the category of a coach coming into that school saying, I really don't know a whole lot about it.
You know, I there's probably still a lot I don't know, and that's understandable, I guess, to where I am. I'm working through it. I spent a lot of time talking to some alums. I spent a lot of time talking to guys on the team and asking questions and getting some history from them, getting some traditions. You know, I've been coaching lacrosse for a while. I feel like I have a decent understanding of the lacrosse side of things, but obviously what you mentioned is the case. You come here and there's a different degree of expectation. There's a different degree of history and tradition. And so it's important that I, you know, soak in as much of that as possible, that I, you know, have as much of that background as I can, but I have to be realistic about it. There's no way I'm going to know everything, because I never played a game at Hopkins. You know, there's no way I could know what it feels like to be in a Hopkins Maryland rivalry until I experienced my first one. And you know, I watched one of them once. I had a friend that was playing in it, and I went to the game in 2004 and watched the 100th anniversary game. It's the only one I've ever seen, but it happened to be a pretty neat one. And you know, that's the closest to the rivalry I've ever gotten. You know, be outside of that, I was coaching other places and didn't have the same understanding. So it's just, it's important that I keep my ears open and my eyes open and my mind open to, you know, being educated by the people around me. And I got to put some faith. I got a staff member who played here and knows a lot about it. And I got to, you know, put some faith in him and in the guys as well, because they can, you know, really help lead us.
But it's along those lines. Is there anything that you didn't expect or that has sort of surprised you upon you being the new coach at Hopkins?
I mean, right off, not specifically. I mean, there's a lot of the same challenges with what we're dealing with recently, but that's maybe why I would answer it that way, is that I don't think I've really gotten an experience in the first year of doing this job of all of the typical traditions and all of the typical, yeah, you know, Hopkins, you know, components. But I've certainly had some great experiences with, you know, with the alums and the people that care and the supporters of this program to learn about it. I mean, that's something I think separates this program from most, that it's just really unique in how many people are, you know, devoted to the success of Johns Hopkins, not just, you know, the alums, but the supporters. I mean, the people that walk by my house that say, good luck, coach, and I've never met them before. I mean, that's a new experience for me. And you know, just meeting people that walking by and, you know, they want to hear how Hopkins lacrosse is going to be. And, you know, it's exciting.
Coach, maybe more so than even other years, we've seen teams have a great improvement from week one to week two. What were you most pleased with the Blue Jays from week one to week two and that improvement? And what do you see from your team or expect to continue to improve in week three and beyond?
an odd way of answering this, but I think the what I was most pleased with the improvement was the in-game improvement. What I thought that we, you know, started off looking like we were just finishing off the game before. And, you know, we were able to turn that around and play quality lacrosse for a period of time. And I don't think we finished all that well. I think we got a little sloppy at the end, lost a little bit of discipline, but you know, the team started to get desperate and pressing us a little bit, and we hadn't had much experience with that. So we need to, you know, get that under our belt and work on it. But, you know, seeing the guys settle in and seeing the guys really, you know, I think we experienced some of that the first week, but not to a great degree. And I think in this game, we turned around a real rocky start into a pretty dominant performance for two quarters. And I think that was, you know, reassuring to see the guys find that understanding, know that we can play good lacrosse. Like we do have the components. There's so much variable in what we're doing right now. There's a lot of newness because it's still, you know, our first, second time through some of these things in game, and we're still learning the language, you know, with each other, and that will take some time. But, you know, I think the confidence and the determination from our guys kind of led us through that. It was good to see.
You mentioned that newness, coach, and some of the personnel switches that you made. Mainly you move Connor DeSimone, a 4-year contributor, down to attack. You take Cole Williams, an all Big Ten attackman the last few years, you move him to the midfield, and you don't have any scrimmages to test that out. Your first go is a conference game, a regular season game against Ohio State. What was that process like for you and your staff, getting those two players to switch those positions, but also get them to a comfort level where they could be productive and be an asset to the team?
We told Connor he's playing attack. We told Cole he's playing midfield. And, you know, knowing there's going to be struggles with it and knowing it's going to take some time. You know, Cole hasn't been on the other side of the midfield in a long time, and he, you know, had some issues with that. But they're competitors. They're hard workers. They're team leaders. I mean, it's not something that I thought in any way would be beyond their ability, and any struggles would derail them for a long term. It's just a matter of getting some experience and getting to sink into those positions a little bit more. But they've made drastic progress. I mean, it's clear that things are starting to work in the right way, but, you know, maybe it's a little nuts without a fall, without scrimmages, to just, you know, throw the wrench into the whole thing. But you know, we need to start working towards it. I mean, that's part of it is just having to be true to the vision that you have and be strong with, you know, with your belief in how you're going to get there. And that's really the base of those decisions.
You mentioned a vision in that, and I guess we should rewind maybe a second to ask exactly what is the Peter Milliman vision for Johns Hopkins lacrosse?
We want to be competing for national championships on a consistent basis, and we want to get there appropriately. I mean, I want to get there as quickly as I can, but I don't want to shortchange the process of what I think it takes to play the version of lacrosse that's going to get us there. And by that, I mean, I don't want to, you know, alter so much of what it's going to take to reach our long-term goal because of what's going to fit for the immediate short term. And you know, if maybe leaving Cole at attack would fit better for right now, but it might not help us develop Brennan Grimes, or it might not fit, you know, the type of offense that we want to run here, then maybe that would be a little bit more difficult. I'm not so sure, because maybe that thing that could still change. You know, I mean, we're week to week here, day to day. But in the big picture, we just, you know, we got together as a staff and made some decisions as far as, you know, what's going to get us where we need to be. And then we really need to coach that. And if it provides us with some struggles early, I don't want to derail our vision because, you know, we can't get past them right now. We got to work through those things.
Coach, another player that I'm fascinated by is Connor Delaney. I know him as a basketball fan, seeing him hit shot to win the conference championship last year, first team All-American on the basketball court. Tell me about his transition to the lacrosse field. A lot of people expected Jared Fernandez maybe to be a LSM this year, but he's injured. Did you recruit him? You know, when basketball made the decision, or the Centennial Conference made the decision that they were going to have basketball, how did he come about being on the lacrosse team?
It started when basketball found out that they weren't going to have a season. And I got a text from Chris Bates, who I coached with at Princeton and who is the coach at Episcopal where Connor went. And I had some conversations with Coach Bates a bunch of years ago when Connor was in high school, and I tried to recruit him to Cornell, and they said, you know, he's going to go to Hop and play basketball. And that was kind of the end of it. When I got a text and he said, he's, you know, maybe interested. What do you think? And I'm like, I'll take him. You know, I mean, I don't know how good he is right now, but I remember he used to be really good. And as you mentioned, he's a first team All-American basketball player and he's a senior. So if there's maybe a sport that translates into ours as well as anything, it's probably basketball. And I know that if you're a first team All-American, maybe it's Division III or not, but you know, he's definitely going to be a tough and smart and hardworking kid. And he's probably going to understand the systems quicker than most. And he's probably going to be able to, you know, find his way into, you know, I don't want to say into the lineup. I was like, he's going to help us somewhere, even if it's just on the sidelines, even if it's just at practice. I'm as close to positive as I could be that Connor Delaney will help us somewhere. And, you know, to his credit, he knocked the rust off a little bit quicker than we anticipated. And he's got some pretty good skills, you know, again, not surprising. He's a basketball player. He's got good hands, but he handles the ball well and he runs transition and he knows the defense and he's a senior. So he's, as far as I'm concerned, is a no brainer of an addition as there is. And I didn't expect him to turn the corner quite so quickly. I was also anticipating Jared Fernandez might be our starting pole up until he got hurt. But you know, we'll get Jared back in the future. He's got some potential here, but just seemed to fit early on with Connor, and he's still got a world of growth in front of him. He hasn't played lacrosse in 4 years.
It's a great story.
A little bit weird to say, but it's Maryland week in the first week of March for Johns Hopkins lacrosse. Mm-hmm. What has practice been like this week so far, Coach? And when you prepare for a team like Maryland, rivalry aside, I mean, this is a conference game, very talented ball club. You both are coming off of nice wins a week ago, you against Michigan, Maryland against Penn State. What have things been like at Homewood this week?
Well, I mean, first thing is in my mind is that we're playing a very good team. You know, I know that there's a tradition here, there's a rivalry, there's an intensity, but we're playing a very good team, and we need to get ourselves prepared to play against a very good team. We got to get, you know, better at loose balls. We've got to get better in the middle of the field. We got to tighten up some things on in the half field, both offensively and defensively. We've got to push each other. We can't, you know, get too excited with that knowledge or, you know, trying to figure out, you know, how to beat them before we work on how to get better as a team. And so, you know, the intensity is definitely there. You know, we get a little bit more of a scrappy approach. Hopefully, you know, those things can pan out. Again, this is my first time through this, so I haven't, you know, I don't have a few of these weeks under my belt to know the difference between this Maryland week and other ones, or the fact that it's still the third week of the game season, or that it's, you know, really the eighth week I've been coaching this team. So it's a lot of, you know, different little things like this. So, you know, I'm going to push them to from what I know and my experience and how I can, you know, prepare us best to beat Maryland. I want to make this week as challenging as any we've had so far and continue to build up, you know, throughout the week.
Coach, one final question for you. I'm just curious about this because I, and Mark, we've both spent a lot of time in the athletic center at Hopkins on the Homewood campus around Homewood Field. Both as student athletes and then, you know, afterwards working around the athletic department. You're the only game in town right now. The women's lacrosse team and the men's lacrosse team are the only ones playing. What's the atmosphere like on campus and around Homewood Field in a pandemic where the other sports aren't playing, yet your counterparts on campuses across the Big Ten have been playing football and basketball and all sports? What's that like?
I mean, selfishly for a while, it was really great having a whole campus to ourselves, like, you know, no scheduling conflicts. We can go where we want to, you know, school has been back in session for a few weeks now, and they've just started to allow some of the teams to begin some distanced and small numbers practices and things like that. That's just in the last couple of days. So, you know, we're just starting to see campus return to form, you know, but I can't argue that there's some benefits to being the only show in town, but it definitely changes the atmosphere. I mean, I haven't really seen anybody outside of the, you know, 60 guys we work with every day. You know, I see a trainer, I see a strength coach. I see a staff that I work with and the team I coach in. And then we see the women in passing, but that's, you know, there's not much interaction. It's not a very social environment, which is, again, just part of what we're dealing with right now, but we'll get there soon.
Well, Coach, thanks for your time today. We know you got to get out to practice, and best of luck this week against the Terps and throughout the 2021 season.
Thank you. Appreciate it for having me. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, thanks. What a year for Peter Miliband, the last 12 months of his life, as he has switched jobs, taken on the mantle as the head coach at Hopkins, and had to do it all amongst one of the most craziest time in any of our lives.
Without question, you're talking about leaving a successful Cornell program and then uprooting your family, coming to Baltimore. You're replacing a legend at Johns Hopkins and Dave Petromala. And you had some life events, you know, happen in there. I believe you had a birth of a child and a family member passed away during those times, and you find a new home and trying to get to know your players, you know, assembling a staff, not necessarily in all that order. I mean, those are just some of the things that popped into, you know, that pop into your head, you know, throughout that conversation and reflecting on it and thinking about everything he's had to deal with. But sounds like, you know, he has a plan for Hopkins, and it's going to be slow growth, and we'll see what happens. You know, greatest rivalry in college across. Yes, I'm on board with that. Johns Hopkins in Maryland. Love calling that game, attending that game, the lead up to the game. Let me ask you, does playing Maryland twice in the regular season take a little bit of excitement out of it, a little bit of luster off of it, or are the stakes raised even higher and your anticipation even greater?
Well, I'm excited about it because we get to see it twice, and it should be a home and home matchup, which is obviously unusual. But I think it does take a little bit away from the traditional season when there's that one date that you circle on the calendar. Oftentimes it's homecoming at Homewood Field, and it's something that you look forward to. But I'll take anything I can get this year. You know, just again, we talked about it last week, and, you know, we asked Peter about being the only game in town. I mean, when he took the job, and, you know, lacrosse is important at Johns Hopkins, but that's they're the only teams playing right now. You know, the Centennial Conference, which Hopkins participates in every other sport, isn't playing this spring and didn't play in the winter and didn't play in the fall, as a lot of Division III conferences were affected by it. So it's just him. And he had a good answer about that, how, you know, how it's strange and lonely, but there are some benefits to not having to worry about scheduling practices and field space and indoor space and whatever it might be. But in terms of the rivalry, I'm really looking forward to it. And let's start there. There's 31 games on tap this weekend, Dix, but in my humble opinion, not a whole lot of marquee games, only three matchups of top 20 teams. But let's start with that Hopkins Maryland game since we're on the subject. It'll be 1 o'clock on BTN Plus, I believe, will cover the game. The Jays have their work cut out for them against Maryland team that looks really good.
No doubt. And you know, if I could just touch on some of the things that you mentioned, this is the earliest Hopkins Maryland game in the history of the rivalry. The earliest prior to this was April 11th. So we're more than a month ahead of April 11th. And I'm with you. When the game is at Homewood, it's typically homecoming, capacity crowd, traditionally really nice weather. When the game's at College Park, the game is typically primetime, 7 o'clock on a Saturday night, and it's always televised. This game is quote unquote televised, but it'll be streamed instead. I've fielded a lot of inquiries this week. Is the game on BTN? And when I tell them that it is on BTN Plus, they're like, what's going on? Look, this is a pandemic, and the programming this weekend for Big Ten Network is the Big Ten wrestling tournament, which is gigantic in the Big Ten. When you consider Penn State, Iowa, they're just two of the teams that are, you know, top two, three in the country. And then you take the other teams that are in contention and the individual wrestlers. And then there's some hockey sprinkled in there. The programming is already put in place for this game. So, and it's interesting, like, Hopkins, Maryland week always leads me to lax power, always leads me to look at the comments in there. The four biggest fervent fan bases in lax power, Hopkins by far. I think their thread is up to like 250 pages. Then you have Navy. Navy's got about 80 pages worth of thread. And then there's Maryland and Loyola. So they're the four biggest, like at most active fan, but Hopkins is chief among them. Shout out Wombat. I know who Wombat is. He's a friend of mine, a good dude. But it's really interesting to look at the Maryland and the Hopkins thread, Hopkins Maryland week. And you got some people being like, how can BTN do this? They're irresponsible to not have the game on. Then other people are like, dude, it's a pandemic and they're doing wrestling and they're doing it. So it's great to like, look at the really emotional folks and then the more, you know, I guess more rational conversation in there. But look, on paper, I mean, Maryland looked terrific last weekend against Penn State. They looked great against Michigan. Hopkins, that second half against Ohio State, they picked it up a little bit more. They had a slow start against the Wolverines, but really dominated that game to win 14-7. Look at Syracuse and Virginia, the conversation we were having a week ago. Virginia comes in rolling heavy, Syracuse licking their wounds, and the Orange double up the Cavaliers in the dome. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but looking week to week, anything is possible. Anything can happen. And I think Hopkins, much like Penn State, I think they should be able to control faceoffs, but can they match the athleticism of that Maryland defense? And Logan McNaney, the freshman quote unquote goalie for Maryland, was really, really good against Penn State. Hopkins is going to need really, really good goaltending. They're going to have to make that Maryland defense move. They should get some shots, but they've got to dodge to score. Right. And then on the other end, when you look at Maryland's offense, again, it's athleticism. You know, I look at Maryland, there's just athletes all over the place at the attack, at the midfield, at the defense, you know, and whereas Hopkins, I think, has some really, really skilled players, but can they match the athleticism of Hopkins is my big question. The other piece of this is Bobby Benson, assistant coach for Maryland. Benson is coaching against guys that he's really, really familiar with and really close with. And interestingly enough, in the preparation for the Maryland Penn State game last week, I asked Coach Tillman, you know, with Coach Benson, you know, did you talk to other coaches or other people in the lacrosse world about Bobby before you hired him? And he's like, you know, I talked to Ryan Moran, head coach at UMBC, former Maryland assistant coach. Talked to Kevin Warren, head coach at Georgetown, who has worked with Bobby in the past, and they're very, very good friends. He said he also talked to Bill Belichick in that regard. About Bobby, because he knows that Belichick had a close relationship with Dave Petromala and the Hopkins coaching staff. And I think Tillman and Belichick have a nice friendship. You know, they have the Naval Academy connection and those kinds of things. So it was really interesting how Coach Tillman did his homework on Bobby Benson. And then, you know, ultimately Bobby is on an interim basis, the offensive coordinator, but that's another layer, you know, another dimension to this rivalry that makes it really compelling.
There's another interesting game, you know, locally for us is Towson, who's 2-3 right now, playing at Drexel. It's Drexel's first game of the season as they open up this Saturday, March 6th. That game's at 1:00, an important game in the CAA.
It is. And I mean, the first thing that pops out is this is Towson's sixth game, I think. They're 2-3 right now. And Drexel, this is their first real game. So it'll be, you know, and it's conference play right off the bat. So, you know, Towson has five games under their belt versus zero for Drexel. Huge advantage to the Tigers. Got to give a special nod to Ross Blumenthal, starting goaltender for the Drexel Dragons. Wish him the best and Drexel the best. But this will be, I mean, we talk about the advantage of teams having games under their belt, playing teams that haven't had that real game. Drexel did have some scrimmages. I think they scrimmaged Salisbury last week. So that was good to get a little taste before you get out there live. But normally we're talking in the context of a team having two, maybe three games before a team has played their first. And in this one, it's almost double that. So we'll see how Drexel responds.
All right. I mentioned there were three matchups of top 20 teams. Let's get to those now. Let's start in the Big Ten. Number 12, Ohio State is 1-1. We'll play number 15, Penn State. The Nittany Lions are looking for their first victory of the season. That game is at noon and also available streaming on BTN Plus.
Huge game. Both these teams coming off of tough losses. Ohio State loses at home to Rutgers. Penn State loses at home to Maryland. So when you're talking conference-only play, no one wants to fall into that 0-3 hole, which is what Penn State is staring at right now. All six teams will make the Big Ten tournament in 2021. But the way things are going, you want to stay out of that Maryland hole. You know, you want to stay out of that four spot, you know, that path where you have to go through Maryland to get to the championship game. Not saying that Rutgers is any easier, not saying that other teams are any easier, but for right what we know right now, you know, Maryland looks like they're the team to beat. And then Rutgers would be, you know, 1A if Maryland's won. So this is a Penn State team that has to score more goals. I'd have to do some homework to find out the last time a Penn State team was held to single digit goals two games in a row. I mean, you're probably looking back 4 or 5 years for that stat. And then Ohio State, you know, I think that defensively they have to clean some things up. The faceoff should be a great battle. Gerard Arcari was great last weekend after not playing a whole lot against Rutgers. Jake Glatz did a nice job in that regard, but Justin Anasio is back for Ohio State. So we'll see how that plays out. But this is a huge game. I think this is a swing game. Like, this is the one where you look at the first half of the schedule and we're talking 3-4 weeks from now. And we look at this result of Penn State, Ohio State, it could go a long way in determining seeding and postseason fortunes, should there be one.
Moving on to the Patriot League, big matchup there as number 10 Loyola, now 2-1, travels up to Pennsylvania to play the number 13 Lehigh Mountain Hawks, who got their first victory under their belt last weekend. That game's at 1:00.
That'll be a huge game. That's going to be a battle. And when you think about Loyola being the preseason favorite again in the Patriot League, you know, you're looking at a Lehigh team that has been to the NCAA tournament numerous times. They've won the Patriot League tournament a couple of times. You know, Army looks really, really strong. Navy was playing great lacrosse. Unfortunately, you know, they're shut in the middle of a 10-day shutdown academy-wide. So we'll see what the future holds for Navy. But when you look at this game, faceoff dot, you know, Bailey Savio missed last weekend's game against Utah. Chris Catone stepped in really nicely. And, you know, Lehigh has a great 1-2 punch with Gaffney and Sisselberger at the faceoff dot. So, and then when you look at, you know, guys like Tommy Schelling on the offensive end for Lehigh, and Andy Eichelberger is a great player. On the flip side, you know, Aiden Olmstead and Kevin Lindley have been really hot for Loyola lately. But, you know, the emergence of Evan James in that third spot, giving them a ton of production in the absence of Joey Kamish, who is yet to play yet this year. This should be a knockdown, drag them out. This will be a battle between the Mountain Hawks and the Greyhounds up in the Valley, the Lehigh Valley. Weather, be interested to see what the weather is. Typically really, really cold. And that wind cuts through you like no other from the mountains. I'm looking forward to checking this one out.
Just a handful of games on Sunday. The marquee matchup on Sunday is number 1 Duke, now 5-0, will travel up to Richmond to play the Spiders at 4:00 on Sunday.
That was a great game a year ago. I think
they've had a bunch of good games recently.
They've had a really
had a series of good game type games.
I feel
Richmond's
like it's
won
like
one
a,
or two.
I feel like it's a circle almost on Tobacco Road. It's like I feel like we're always talking about Duke, Richmond, High Point,
North Carolina, Virginia,
North Carolina,
the SoCon. You know, well, Richmond and High Point will play anybody in the ACC anytime they get a chance, and they give them good games most of the time.
Yeah,
but Richmond and Duke have had a nice series over the last several years.
They have, and Duke is a team that's starting to get, you know, a little bit more. You know, they dominated Air Force last weekend. Joe Robertson had a great day. Good to see him back and looking healthy. And then Richmond, their first win of the year, we mentioned it earlier against Towson. So that was a boost to them, got a good dose of confidence. But, you know, look, another ACC SoCon battle. It should be good, should be highly skilled, should be a fast game. That's the one thing I noticed, like being in person for the Penn State Maryland game. That's the first in-person collegiate lacrosse I had seen since February of last year. And you forget just how fast this game is and how skilled these kids are when you're that, you know, when you're in person. Sometimes you don't appreciate that off of a screen, a television screen or a computer screen or whatever. But this should be a fast paced game. And yeah, I think you got to give the advantage to Duke, but like you mentioned, like Richmond plays these guys tough all the time, you know, and I don't expect anything less on Sunday.
Good slate of games this week. No games on broadcast TV. So make your plans now of how you're going to stream your favorite teams in the biggest game. So get after it.
And again, you know, access to games has been never been greater, you know, whether it's BTN Plus or ESPN Plus, you know, and look, I understand the quality isn't network quality, but it's still something, you know. It's like, remember in the olden days where like your radio, you know, the turn dial radio, and you would get that station and then you're like, okay, I got it. And you're like, but I think I could hear it better. And then you like make that little turn and all of a sudden that whatever you were listening to disappears. And you're like, damn it. You're like, I'd rather have it scratchy and somewhat, you know, crummy than not at all.
Yeah,
you know,
not at all.
I think that's kind of the way you have to look at it with the streaming services.
Yeah, I agree. And again, we're not allowed to attend the games in a lot of places. So any way you can watch is preferred over not seeing it at all.
I did see that Syracuse is allowing, I think, 800 or 900 fans to attend the game against Vermont in the Dome this weekend. So that's cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
Real positive.
Also, I'm loving the new Inside Lacrosse scoreboard. Well, IL plug there. It's a really more robust feature within game stats. And
oh, that's a great resource. That's
it's awesome fantastic. Resource. So yeah. Nice job over there to
the lads.
The lads at Inside Lacrosse. Nice job. All right, Dick, it's time for our give and go. And I had something else planned, but I really like this idea since we've been talking about the rivalry this week. I want to get your thoughts on your favorite memories of the Maryland-Hopkins rivalry. It can be as a player, can be as a fan, can be as a, you know, before or after your time as a Blue Jay. I'm going to give you a couple of mine first, if that's okay. You give you a second to think. A true give and go here. Obviously, you know, Coach Milliman mentioned it in his interview. He's only been to one. He went to one Hopkins Maryland game. It happened to be one of the best. It was the 100th playing of the rivalry in 2004. It was at Homewood Field. Capacity crowd. I'm not sure there's ever been more people at Homewood Field. I think the announced attendance was something like 10,555 fans. And it was a really good game between the number one ranked Blue Jays at the time. They had a great team that year. And number three, Maryland, and the Blue Jays won. So that I remember that game. I remember that being a big deal. I think they had special uniforms that each team wore, and they used as a fundraiser to you know, auction off the uniforms. I just remember that was a fun night at Homewood Field. And then the other two memories come from the same season, and they really stick out to me. It is the 1995 season. In 1995, that was one of Hopkins, maybe their best team that didn't win a championship. The 1995 team with Brian Piccola and Terry Reardon and Peter Jacobs and Milford Marchand. A lot of, like, you graduated in 94, so all of your buddies and teammates. And that was an undefeated Hopkins team. And I believe the regular season game was in Byrd Stadium, and Hopkins won. Terry Reardon, I think, had the game winner, had a great game. And I was working in sports information at Hopkins at that time. And there was a great shot of Terry after the winning shot. And that ended up being like a spread in Sports Illustrated, which was a big deal for Hopkins and lacrosse and, you know, our sports information shop and our team there. So that was really cool. And that was a huge crowd. There must have been 10,000 plus
people. What was I there?
I think, were you working that game?
I was there.
I think I was there
at the game. Yeah, I was there. Yeah, that was it was like 16-15. I think Terry scored on a broken play or something.
Just a really nice. It was like, you know, this was late April or whatever. Beautiful spring day, clear skies, great crowd, and just a fantastic lacrosse game. And then
conversely for Hopkins fans, the Final Four loss that year to Maryland, where Brian Daugherty was just having one of the best games of his career and just shut down a Hopkins team that was undefeated at the time. And a lot of number one seed, I think Maryland must've been the number four seed. But Hopkins was a prohibitive favorite to win the NCAA championship that year. And it was an extremely disappointing outcome for all Hopkins fans. And one of the more in a storied history of games, I'm sure that one stands out. Both of those games stand out for either fan base as great in a certain way in the history of the rivalry. So those are like three really games that are memorable and stick in my mind.
Yeah. So there's so many that I could pinpoint to. I know as a youngster, my father took me, I think it was to the 1979 or 1980. No, I think it was a 79 national championship game at Byrd Stadium, Maryland and Hopkins. Of course, I didn't know what it was at the time. I just thought I was going to a game. And so I do have some memories of that. I think being a Hopkins fan growing up, the 87 game up at Rutgers when Maryland was undefeated, and then Hopkins was able to beat them to advance to the national championship game and then win the title. As a player, the 94 game, my senior year, it was homecoming at Hopkins. Maryland wore black jerseys. We both weren't great that year. We were tournament quality, but that was a game where both teams really, really needed it to advance in the NCAA, not only to qualify for the NCAA tournament, but to get a decent seed. We beat them, I think, 12-10. It was standing, huge crowd, loud. I got in for a couple minutes, to give some guys a rest. So I'll never forget being in that game for just a couple minutes, but it was still cool. As a broadcaster, a ton of memories, starting with the radio. I think it was the 97 game at Hopkins. It was at Homewood Field. That was the game that really led to, so MAR was doing games at that time, but I think they were more like picking and choosing the matchups versus a weekly schedule. And I think the ratings that game got and the entertainment, I still remember, I think it was Rob Dorr may have put a Maryland player through the back of the net. Carcaterra made a save or something, and there was a little bit of something going on, and Dorr blasted a turp, and the goal came off of its moorings and stuff. I was doing radio at that time, so that was really, really cool. Television, I remember the first Big Ten championship in the rain for Big Ten Network 2015 when Hopkins won that game against Maryland and Ryan Brown. That was, I think Ryan Brown may have had eight goals in that game for Johns Hopkins. And then a few weeks later, was doing the radio for the Westwood One in the national semifinals. And that was an amazing game. Maryland won that game, but that was the Joel Tinney shot late, I think. And then Kyle Bernlohr made the save off the butt end of his stick that just kept the ball out of the goal and prevented overtime. And that, I just remember that being an amazing lacrosse game. And I remember meeting the captains that weekend and having a conversation with Eric Schneider, Mike Pellegrino, and Wells Stanwyck. And I really didn't know them that well, but talking with them for that 15, 20 minutes was really, really cool. Getting to know them and wishing them the best. And then, I was a Maryland team that had the likes of, Rambo and Heacock were younger. There were sophomores on that team. Isaiah Davis Allen was on that team, and Matt Dunn. That was a great game. That was just a really, really good game. And, as a broadcaster, you couldn't have been happier with the way it turned out. I mean, obviously as a Blue Jay fan, it was disappointing, but that was just a great game. So those are some of the memories amongst many that I have of Maryland Hopkins.
Yeah, those are great memories, Dix. The rivalry trophy will be on the line twice this year. First time this Saturday, 1:00 in College Park.
Yeah, that trophy's a beauty. That really is beautiful. Shout out John Bolster, coached his son Johnny, a really nice player for the Rough Riders 2022s and good player for Catonsville High School. He's one of the people that helped make that trophy. And that's a work of beauty.
I'm a big fan of trophies
and named things in big games, robberies. I think this makes it a little more special. And, you know, like there in football, there's like the old wooden bucket and, you know, yeah. The Big Ten has a lot of those and those really old robberies. I just always think they're cool.
Yep.
All right. We'd like to thank our guest this week, Johns Hopkins head coach, Peter Milliman. Thanks for your time and best of luck to the Blue Jays this week and throughout the 2021 season. If you like what you heard, please like us on your favorite podcast app and leave a review. We don't get enough reviews. So if you can, take the time, leave a quick review.
Tell a friend. You want to be judged.
Tell a friend and share the love. It's free. What do you got to lose? We also love to hear from you. So give us a shout out on Twitter. He's at Dixon Lacrosse. And I'm simply at D_FLY. Remember, stay positive, test negative. And as always, enjoy the games while you can. Womp, 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 womp.